Mississippi, 4 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 1.5 Mississippi. One, go.
Welcome to CodeCast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at CodeAgora.
Hi, I'm Alinani, and I'm a cybersecurity enthusiast, and you're listening to CodeCast.
Welcome to episode 23 of CodeCast. I'm your host, Mukuma, and today I have a big surprise for everybody. Guess who's in the studio today?
I am back after a long leave, indefinite leave.
At this point, Cynthia, you are a guest.
I am a guest. Actually, we do have two guests. Yeah, I'm one of those.
Don't ruin the surprise.
Oh, no.
Another surprise.
No.
How was your week?
Yeah, it was amazing.
It's just started, though.
It has just started. Why was I saying it was amazing? I think I was referring to last week. See?
What have you been up to these days?
Oh, quite a lot. I was attending a workshop on social accountability. Yeah.
I think we'll devote an episode to talk about social accountability because I have questions.
Definitely. And I have answers.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so today we're not talking about social accountability. Today we're talking about something that someone, I won't say bugged me about, but kept reminding me that we should do an episode on something like this. And I am glad that we're finally doing it. It may not be in the exact same way he wanted it, but I guess we'll tackle a few things about it and then save the rest for another episode. So today we're talking about security and what it means for coders. We need to remember that security starts with ourselves, especially as coders. I know we fall into that trap where you don't worry
too much. Skip, I'll do it later.
Exactly, because you want to get to the fun stuff. And then we talk about the basic steps each coder should take in making sure they build an application that's secure. And we'll also talk about automating some of the processes that are involved in actually securing applications. Yes, you got that right. You can automate certain stuff about it. So please pay close attention. And joining us to talk about security is Alinani. Alinani, do you want to tell everybody what you do?
Okay, hi, Mukuman. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello.
Okay, so my name is Alinani, as has already been mentioned. I am a software developer. I've been developing for the past 10 years, I think. Yeah, about 10 years. And I've worked as a security applications developer and in charge of managing information systems at one of the government institutions currently. So this includes software development and security around that. I think in a nutshell, that's what I do.
Okay, that's nice. So before we get into today's topic, Cynthia, do you want to run us through some news?
Yes, I've been so excited about that. Which one do I start with, local or international? Which one?
Start with international so we can end with the good stuff.
Okay, so I'll talk about what we call the Developer Community Challenge, which is being held by Facebook, that is Facebook for Developers. The deadline for submitting on the challenge, okay, so let me start with the tools. We had a similar thing last year. This year, they are concentrating on using React 360, Spark AR, and HTML5 for games. So this is about developers in the developer communities, which are in over 130 cities around the world, and have a membership of over 200,000 developers. Oh, that's a large number. Yes. So developers are invited to submit software across one of the three categories, which is productivity and utility, gaming and entertainment, and social good. So you can use React 360, Spark AR, or HTML5 games to actually participate in these categories. And there are over $165,000 in prizes for regional and global winners. For last year's winners, some of them actually attended the F8 this year, which was our own local team, which had Pendo and Wilfred and Olivier. So these are local developers. So who knows, maybe even the winners for this year's will be able to attend next year's F8. Fingers crossed. Then, if you want to register for this community challenge, just go for developers.facebook.com and you'll be able to access this, and there are links there on how you register and steps on how you participate. Then local is Laka. Of course. So next month, on the 19th and the 20th, we have something amazing happening. We have what we are calling the Developer Conference Zambia, and we have many sponsors, like the likes of Asikana Network. There's Mew Stickers, there's Facebook Developer Circles, there's, who am I leaving out?
AWS. Bongo Hive.
There's Bongo Hive, there's Git.
Git Kraken. We just have lots in store this year, much better than last year.
So it will be by Unza at the Confucius Center. For tickets, right now we are doing early bird tickets until the 1st of September.
Yeah, but by the time everybody hears this, that will be over.
Selling regular
passes by then. But I'll tweet about it before it ends. So, yeah, by the time you hear this, I would have already tweeted or posted on my Facebook. So if you haven't responded to that, you're too late.
Uh-oh, sadly. Then, so the early bird tickets are at 150. The ordinary ones will be at 250. I mean, save that 100, Kwacha. Look out for the tweets. I hope by the time you're listening to this, you did see the tweet. Fingers crossed. This is speaking futuristic. Funny. Okay, so so the developer conference, which we are bringing local developers. We're also having speakers from abroad also to talk about the latest technologies. There'll be a lot of networking. If you're a business that leverages on developers, or you want to interact with our developers, or you are a developer yourself, we encourage that you come through and participate in this 2 days long developer conference. Yes. Mukoma.
No, I'm happy. I'm happy DevCon is happening again. It's one of the few things that I now look forward to every year.
It started like a joke.
Yeah. But here we are. Okay, before we, do you have any other news?
Oh, no. That's it for me.
Okay, I heard something today that's very interesting. Huawei officially released their
OS.
Harmony OS. It's been there for a while. It's just now it's official. And there's a lot of fuss from devs in the infrastructure world about the fact that it's built off a microkernel. Don't ask me what that is. I have no idea. I need to do some reading about it. But I'll put some links in the description for everybody to go through. And then, yeah, we look forward to hearing if they will be let back into, Google's ecosystem. But with the way it's looking, they are bracing themselves for the worst.
I like how I'm not supporting anyone here, but I just like how they quickly sort of found solutions around everything that was happening to them.
Look, this is all we're crying for. We're just asking that people look beyond the problems and find solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the minimum price has gone up to 150, but what is there an alternative? Is there a solution? You know what I mean? I know there's lots of people that are making inroads in this kind of sphere of focusing on solutions, but I don't know if we have enough of those people.
Oh yeah.
So the same with developers and whatever space you're in, looking for solutions to challenges. Yeah, basically. Okay, before I get all emotional about millimeter. Okay. So we get into the episode. I was really looking forward to this because I felt like I slack in a lot of these areas. Yes, I think about security, but really not going beyond logins and SSL and, all the other stuff that they tell us to worry about.
Oh, believe me, you and I are the same.
Same, right?
But Alinani is about to educate us.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want to take this one, Alinani? What does security mean for coders?
Yeah, so I think you have already mentioned what my problem is with coders. And I think it's something that I don't blame us, but I blame the whole system of how we are taught to code. If you look back in school, I think the only security speech I was taught about was SQL injection, and that was it. I think it was not even explained in full. Most of what I was taught when I started coding was all about functional requirements. Is it working? Is it working right? As you said it right, is the login screen there?
Mm-hmm.
Am I able to log in? Do I have the right credentials? And that is it. And this was single factor authentication, just your password, and that is it. But I think now things have evolved, and we have issues such as multi-factor authentication, that at least you should have something and know something to get access to any, say, an account that say on the cloud, your emails and whatnot. So the first thing for me is if we look at the information security cycle, we have, I think you hear of blue team, the red team, purple team, but you have the yellow team, which is the coders, the architects, the builders. And you know, 84% of data breaches are not as a result of a firewall or a network issue, but is as a result of a bad software, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Software that has got vulnerabilities. And so this is why I feel it's a discussion that we should be having all around, because I think companies are losing billions, you know, when data breaches occur. You have, if you're interfacing with the EU citizens, you have GDPR, that's a general data protection regulation, that you will be fined. You know, you have British Airways already being fined, Marriott hotels being fined for such data breaches. And if you look, you'll find that probably there's a problem in the software. So where does it start? It starts from the coder, the software developer, the programmer, however you may call him. So we need to change the mindset of the developer, the culture. That is the first thing that has to change, even before we talk about all these complicated issues of penetration testing, you know, code analysis. It is a mindset change that we need first.
Okay, that sounds great. I'm curious, I don't know how many people understand what the information security lifecycle looks like, and when we think about that and we talk about steps that one should take in terms of, like, I remember learning how to write code, then getting into uni and then being introduced to development practices and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. Of course, security wasn't a big part of those development practices, but there was this mental shift towards planning. Like, it wasn't just about jumping straight into writing code.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to plan your work, you had to do your functional requirements, you had to do your whatever use cases. If it's now we're talking about agile, you know, you write your little, what do you call those things on the board?
Which little thing is?
You know, the little cards with, like, all the stuff you're supposed
the
to do.
The issues, tasks?
Yes, all
and
that stuff.
Plan the sprints?
Exactly. And
mm-hmm.
you have startups
yeah.
and you do all that stuff. Like,
mm.
Where does security fit in terms of the life cycle? Because I'm sure the information security life cycle fits in somewhere in the overall
mm-hmm.
goal of building software and stuff like that.
Okay, so when we talk of how information security fits into the whole life cycle, we basically want it to begin at the earliest, the starting point, the planning phase. Okay, so as you plan, you want to first of all look at your team of developers, get them trained on the best security practices, And after that, you'd want to have an architecture review. This is basically the design phase. Okay, so when you have your design, you realize that most of the flaws in terms of software as a result of bad design, and these are the ones that are very difficult to rectify. So this is one of the earlier stages at which you should at least implement security in. Now, having said that, a simple approach to baking in security into any application or software you are using is just simply by using the secure development lifecycle, okay, which will outline each stage and what you would need to do. So like I've already talked about in the design, mm-hmm. The secure development lifecycle will tell you about such things like your architecture review, where are you placing your application, and the like. It will ask you to collect security requirements. We always collect user requirements, functional, and the like. Rarely do we collect security requirements. And so by following this SDLC, you'll be able to see, it will mandate you to say, okay, have you collected? You have a checklist, and it will ask you for security requirements. After which you have issues like threat modeling. This is now how an attacker will perceive your application and what attack vectors might they use. So this is stuff that you will think through as you use the secure development lifecycle.
Interesting. There's one thing I actually did not know, that you actually do gather requirements for security. I think most of the times we just say, okay, we have a user. What are their requirements? What are the functionalities they need?
Yeah, just the functional requirements. But security-wise, nothing.
Yeah.
And this is security is always an afterthought, if you think of it.
Oh, yeah.
Security is always an afterthought. And it doesn't, it's not only with, you know, local developers, but even big companies, Samsung, Apple, it's always an afterthought. We want to push the product out there. Is it working? Yes. Oh, okay. Now let's bake in security, when security is actually supposed to start from the beginning. And you find that certain regulation, again, I'll go back to GDPR, will require you to bake in security from the very start, so that even if a breach occurs, you can show we put in these controls and these measures to prevent such a thing. So let it not be an afterthought.
Yeah. But I'm curious, like, why is it an afterthought? There has to be a reason why for everybody it's an afterthought. I mean, you understand the big companies or the people that are trying to ship products quickly, they want to get it in the hands of the consumer, they want to make some money,
yeah.
And they're praying that there's nothing wrong. But why is it just an afterthought for everybody else? It's like there is no particular stereotype with this one. Like, I'm even speaking for myself. Like, it's an afterthought. I think about it afterwards. And even when you do run tests, if at all you do, they're never comprehensive, right?
No.
Because, you know, you have to think like a hacker and think of all the different scenarios. Like, you will reason what the most likely scenario is and then secure that, and then say, if ever this happened, I will come back and, like, you know, patch up the rest.
Yeah. So I think when we talk of security and application security in particular, okay, any other security as far as cybersecurity, information security is concerned, it's not an individual's job, but it's an entire team. And what I have noticed is that every software development project is supposed to have some sort of governance in place, and we rarely have that. You have one developer who's the tester, who's the everything, you know?
That is me.
And, and this brings about serious problems. So if we have roles and responsibilities, you will find that you have a developer, a tester, and someone responsible for security whose sole purpose is to check your code or to break your system so that the coder can go back and correct these things. But usually you find that we are thin on resources, and the developer is the guy who's developing, testing, deploying, and the like. In terms of why is this an afterthought, I think we are more interested. I think it's just human nature. We like the flashy things. Is this thing working right? Is it printing the right reports and the like? Okay, that is good. But not until you have a major incident. For example, if you come up with a system that does not have proper user management or authentication, you find someone, a basic user, accessing information that they are not supposed to see, and the like, and the company ends up losing a lot of money if that data is sold. And so with the coming of more stricter regulation, I think people have realized that it's always an afterthought. How do we change the mindset? This will only be done by enforcing regulation. And I think, having companies, organizations feel that pinch. And when we talk about the application security, it's not only with the developer, but what is the culture in the organization at the top? Whoever is heading the organization, the C-level, the C-suite, what is the culture? Is security something that they treasure or they don't? Because it being an afterthought is actually costs the company much more than if things were fixed before an application was deployed. So I think in the past, we haven't really had regulation that really punishes people for such carelessness, but now we are seeing such regulation being enforced, and we are seeing a move towards people talking about, much more than just SQL injection and the like, but people are paying much more attention to this. When you look at multi-factor authentication, you look at your banks now with a bank fraud that is there. You cannot just develop an application and put a PIN. Now we are getting a one-time passwords and the like just for you to log into your account. So we can see in the various systems, even in our local market that we're using, that security is being taken a level serious than what we had before.
Interesting. Can I take you back? There's a moment where you said, so it would be advisable for an organization to have somebody in the software development team who's responsible for security. So for a company that, say, is using different stacks, like they are using JavaScript, they are using Python, they are using Kotlin, what would be the best type of person they would hire for the security aspect? Does that person have to know all the different stacks that the particular firm is using, or it doesn't really matter?
Also, does it have to be a person, though?
Oh, yeah.
It could be a tool, right?
Yes.
Right. So, it could be a tool, mm-hmm. Yes. You could automate. But, there are certain things that are best done by a person. So, let me address the issue of the person first.
Okay.
The issue of the person is, number one, there are things that they do not really need to know each and every programming language.
Okay.
There are certain things that are general to all programming languages. So let's take, for instance, I need to sanitize any input that I have. It doesn't matter if I'm using Java, C Sharp, PHP, you name it. That's just basic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sanitize data. So this person will look at your code and say, okay, so now when they are doing their static code analysis, okay, you'll say, okay, we are getting input from here. Is it being sanitized? Yes or no? They would also look, for example, at string functions, which are quite vulnerable at times. There's a buffer overflow attack, okay, or vulnerability, I may say, that usually happens string functions. So you look at the string functions being used in a particular programming language and see is this function susceptible to search. So there are certain things that are general and certain things that are specific. When we talk of specific things, we'll look at automating. When we talk of automating and we are looking at static application security testing or dynamic application security testing, there you can automate and have other applications run through your code. For example, if you're doing static application security testing, you can use tools like which you can automate. For example, Code Warrior, if you're using PHP, C#, PHP, and the like. For those who like use of Node.js, you have Node.js Scan, which can also do Python and the like. So these are specific to the type of language that you're using. And these are the things that you can use to automate. There are others that are free, of course. There's an application called Checkmarks that will through your code once you check it into your source control, and you to bring up flags. It's quite a good dashboard where you can be able to check most of these vulnerabilities that your code can have. So at a certain point, some things you'd want to manually do them, others you can automate using such tools.
Okay.
So going back to stuff like regulation, from your opinion, like strictly your opinion, what do you think we're doing locally, right? We had an episode recently where we had conversations around people's opinions and what general laws safeguard people on the internet and so on and so forth. And I guess this is an opportunity to extend that to like stuff like application security. Like generally, do we have something like a GDPR, but something locally here? Are we making strides in cyber law, for example, that put in place measures for the user to be protected at all costs by making sure that software companies are held accountable, or they also put in place measures that make sure that they employ best practices every time they are shipping products and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think locally strides are being made to address the issue of data privacy. I think there's a bill that is yet to be passed. I think you're aware of the Electronic Transactions Act that is being broken up into about five separate acts. Okay, I think there are bills at the moment. Not sure how far that has gone, but there is one that deals with data privacy. Mm-hmm. And data privacy would be anything that would lead to personal identifiable information being accessed by people who are not supposed to have access to it. So what keeps our data safe, I think, is the software that stands between the person trying to access it and where it's being stored. So I think with such requirements, people or organizations that are keeping our data will be forced to ensure that the applications that we use, how our data is stored, complies with this regulation. And I think that will bring a certain level of security indirectly. Not that there will be regulation that probably will say, developers, did you do ABCD, ABCD? But the implication is, if we're talking about data privacy, things like if I keep it public, we will probably encrypt our data. Okay. Mm-hmm. What encryption standard are we using?
Yeah.
Issues like your authentication, is it multi-factor? Is it strong authentication that you have in place? Issues like logging. Are we able to see who modified the data at what time and the like? So indirectly, these issues will need to be part of any application that we are using as a result of such regulations.
Yeah, and I think I'll go hunting for all these bills and acts and put them in the description as well, so people have a good sense of what's happening in the landscape currently, especially locally.
Yeah.
So we talked about planning, right? You have to plan for security, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we kind of went and skipped into different things, but I wanted to talk specifically about the actual checking process. Like, we've talked about having an extra person on the team that is specifically meant for security. But if we are being realistic, for example, like in every organization that I've ever worked for,
I'm the one doing everything.
I'm the only developer. And unfortunately, security is not something that comes from the top willingly.
Oh, yeah.
It's also an extreme afterthought. And usually, if there's a problem, is when you will see some kind of strides being made towards actually, you know, making sure that that problem never happens again. And then even in that scenario, it's just sorting out that problem. It's never an extending into checking whether other things have been put in place. I can give you a practical example of, I won't mention which organization this is, but I know that they have a system where, like, login credentials, for example, are as simple as your ID number, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your phone number as your username and password, for example. And this is something that was done to make it easier for their target market to log in because of the vast knowledge gap in the different demographic areas that they were targeting, and also, you know, ICT skills and so on and so forth. Like, in terms of working as an individual, how do you hold yourself accountable?
Because you're a one-man team. So
exactly.
Yeah.
As an individual, is it possible to hold yourself accountable?
It's quite difficult.
All right. I mean, it's a difficult one, because even if you have tools that you automate and they flag this and that, you are alone. You say, I can ignore this, I can ignore that. So you really need someone else to check your work. The same way when you are proofreading, I mean, if you write an assignment or something like that, I think you would proofread and everything looks fine. The next person will look at your work and will spot out all these, all these gaps. So I would say you would want to use some automated tools, and these tools, yes, will flag vulnerabilities. And if you're honest with yourself, you will work on them. But I would still advise going a step further and asking another person just to look at your code. In bigger or larger organizations, you find there's a separation. Again, in our local market, most if not all organizations I know, even the financial sector, the developer has access to production environment, which is not supposed to. So yeah, I think automate, and if possible, ask a good friend to go through your code, or pay someone to do it. But it's important if you're doing it alone.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in an organization, we are reactive as opposed to being proactive. We wait for something bad to happen, and then we fix it quickly and we forget about it. But the tone at the top, the CEO, the people in management, the C-level, are the ones that should take this seriously. And the simple way of having them take issues of security seriously is, for example, in my organization, when I'm talking about security, I map it to the east to have on the business. Okay? The image of the organization. And that is the last thing they understand. That is what they want to hear. They are not going to listen to, oh, this is SQL injection, or I need a tool that will do this, or I need an extra tester, developer on my team. For them, that is just an extra cost. Why do you need that? So as people managing such projects, we should develop a skill of mapping the impact that a security breach or vulnerability in software would have, and map this on the impact that it would have on the business. And if possible, quantify that. And once they see that, they will pay attention to security. And I think that is what is lacking, because most of the time, we because we're developers, we're too technical, and we are not thinking in those lines. But to get their attention, that's what I think, in my opinion, that's what I have been doing.
I like what you touch on, you know, the whole idea of being able to communicate your needs as a developer to senior management or whoever is up the chain. And this is something that we talked about, Cynthia.
Oh, yeah.
People that are lucky to have product managers.
So yeah. Someone Cynthia can communicate.
Yeah, it's super, super important. And I feel like those are skills that a lot of people are lacking quite a bit, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And usually when we talk about skills that developers are lacking, we refer to maybe if they're trying to, you know, build a startup, or they're lacking the business, you know, side of stuff. And that's exactly what this is. Like, it's not even really about the lacking the business, it's just communication skills.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to understand what the other person's needs are, and using their needs against them, kind of, to get what you need and what you want. It's basically what it is, I guess. It's very interesting. So what happens when you checked for security stuff, maybe you missed something, you ship, and then something wrong happens?
You have lots of coffee when fixing it.
At least you still have your job. Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm reminded of, I think as coders, there's always a point where you write your code and you just want to run it, compile it. You really don't, and when you do that, you don't even think some bug will pop up. And I'm still amazed that the confidence that we have, you know, at that point, until a bug pops up, I say, oh, this and that. And so it's always good to have contingency plans in place, okay? And there are certain controls where I think it depends on what goes wrong. So, for example, we know, let us assume we're coming up with an application that stores sensitive data. We know that the first level of security that we would probably have is our login. So let's assume someone breaks through that. And this is the importance of threat modeling after we collect our security requirements and the like. So let's assume someone goes through, logs in with stolen credentials or has access to a database. The second layer of security that we'll put in place will be to encrypt that data. That person will not be able to view that data. Okay. So I think putting some sort of layered security approach to applications that we are deploying would be important. Let us not assume that something will not go wrong. I found that it's always safer to assume something might go wrong, and you prepare for how you would respond to such an incident. Whether you quickly patch, withdraw the application that you have, and the like. But I think I would say contingencies and several layers of keeping being put in place would help you just in case one layer is compromised.
Okay, so what are some of the practical situations that you've come across in your career that have forced you to make contingency or to take contingency measures? Like, run me through a scenario that you went through that forced you to either take down an application or apologize or beg for your job. Or
beg for your job.
Beg for my job. So, you know, when it comes to software development, for me, I love the planning phase, okay, where you come up with this entire architecture. And if the architecture has not been done correctly, you really get into some deep trouble. Even if your code is running correctly, you still have issues. So, one of the issues I experienced, a simple one. I think there was a website belonging to the organization, and it received. I think we're just using one server, and there was so much traffic. So there was a DDoS attack, the distributed denial of service attack on the server. Okay, and at that point, all sorts of, I mean, you don't know what happened at that point, okay? And then the time now that you realize to say what it is, and you cannot do anything on the site, we had to take it down. Did we beg for our jobs? And we explained. And that's one of the issues. Now, that's one of the things that made me realize the importance of security and making sure that applications that you take out to the public are resilient, okay, in terms of availability. And from there, each time we're doing an architecture review for an application that is going to be accessed by the public, you always include issues to do with load balancing. You at least make use of a number of data centers if it's something that you can host on AWS. AWS is a powerful platform. I love it, and really for resilience, it's my number one go-to piece, I think. So that for me changed my mindset when it came to how are the applications deployed.
So essentially what you're saying is never deploy sensitive data on a shared hosting platform or a shared server.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so again, when I talk to threat modeling, if we had followed development life cycle and had the point where we had some threat modeling, we'd say, hey, what if we have too much traffic coming here? Mm-hmm. What happens? You know, then we'd have put a contingency in place and okay, we have 4 or 5 or a load balancer here and there, and you know, this will access you know, a separate server that has the core. An architecture that is robust. Yeah. So again, security. System is up there and it's looking nice pictures and everything until you have that.
You've done your SEO, you know, there's traffic, you're feeling nice.
Yes. So I think that's one of the experiences that I have learned from.
Okay. What have we missed, Cynthia?
Oh, we haven't missed a thing. I'm just now just thinking maybe we should dedicate another episode where he runs us through step by step in the secure development life cycle.
You were
Let me be honest, dear audience. I was like the yellow team, blue team. What are the ones? Did you say purple team? He said
red as purple well. Team, green team.
I was like,
what? No, that is just the information security wheel, actually, not life cycle, but wheel. It just talks about the different, you see, as I said, security is just not one person's responsibility. So each person plays a role. So you have the people, for example, who want to do your penetration testing when your app is out there. Those who belong to the red team. Then you have people putting in defenses. Those are in the blue team and the like. So,
we come and learn about these teams and the development life cycle.
I think these are things that we ignore and can be quite costly, especially looking at where we're going, the rate of digitization, the innovations that we have. You look at financial services. Everyone has some sort of mobile money account. These are things that we cannot, ignore.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I think I'd be lying if I said I'm not guilty of a lot of the things
we
that
are
mentioned today. I'd be lying quite a bit. But I think
it's a mindset change.
I'm really changing my ways.
We have a sinner about to repent.
Yeah, we all are.
So just one last question. How hard was it to get into the security space? Because you identify as a coder, obviously, but leaning towards security and enforcing all the best practices that are available. So how did you get into this space? What was the motivation, basically?
All right. So I've always been enthusiastic about issues to do with security, cyber security. Okay. And so when I started out, I loved coding. And at a certain point, I decided to branch out to security. And I got to learn more about cyber security issues. So I did some sets with the Science Institute incident response, basically penetration testing and the like. And as I moved that direction, I got to realize, hey, the things that we are talking about, mapping onto developers, these are things that we can easily mitigate as we develop our applications. So having that knowledge, started mapping the two. And I think from there, it's always been something that I can say I'm still transitioning. I still love coding and I still love security. And this is now me finding myself at the middle. Some days I don't know what to do. Should I code? Should I do something that's more security centered? But this is the space where I am now. And I think I'm comfortable. I love it because it speaks to both my desires, security and coding. Yeah.
Adinani is sounding like me.
Should
I code or should I just get into product management strictly?
Management.
I love both.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could leave one as a hobby, you know that, right? Like coding could just be your hobby.
Right now, coding has just turned out to be a hobby, actually.
And you find that you enjoy it quite a lot, though.
It's actually more enjoyable. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But you see, the goodness is you get to understand where. This entire how this entire system is being built, I think it's very very few people have the perspective of a coder, and from background, it's easier for you to communicate and help the people that are actually coming after you,
all
and
right,
make
yeah.
sure that the things that you do actually the gaps that were existed when you were there no longer exist. So,
Oh yeah, that's true.
Okay, will we see you at DevCon next month?
Hopefully, I hope I'm back in town at that time.
Okay, we will continue hoping, and we'll see you.
Fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this has been a really interesting episode. I've learned quite a lot. I am happy to continuously, you know, learn and grow.
Yeah.
Not only a developer, but just, you know, a technology enthusiast in general. And hopefully, over the next few months, we'll hear a lot more stories about people changing their ways. Like I have, I should be a testament to all other.
Oh, believe me, I'm changing from today forward.
You too, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Would love to hear your stories around technology and whether you've been hacked or not. Or would love to hear stories about that bug that someone
made
fixed.
You beg for your job.
That bug that kept you up.
Beg for your job. Yeah. But let me be quick. If there is one key takeaway from this for developers and everyone in the cybersecurity space, that they should go away with is that knowing that there is no silver bullet for developing a secure application or secure software. It's a team effort, and there are a number of things that should be done. I know we look for quick solutions, but there's no silver bullet for this.
That's vital information. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, where do they find you in case they had any more questions?
You can get me on LinkedIn. Just Alina and some gym by you. I should pop up. Or Facebook.
Facebook, what is your
same. Alina and some gym.
Oh, same thing. I think we'll put a link in the description as well.
Yeah.
So people can definitely find you and add you.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you want to get in touch with the podcast, White Codecast ZM on Twitter, White Codecast ZM on Instagram, on Facebook, White Codecast Zambia, also on LinkedIn, at Codecast Zambia. If you want to come on the show and chat with us about anything that you want, feel free to DM us, mention us. If you want to find Cynthia, that's Bison Khaleesi on Twitter, sour_bones, feel free to just get in touch with us and, you know, talk to us. We're pretty cool people and we'd love to chat and talk.
Yes.
As you found out, we're still doing this.
We talk a lot.
Too much. So on that note, we end the podcast. Thank you very much, Alinani, for coming through. We appreciate you giving us input. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Pleasure,
everybody. I am back.
Okay, Codecast out. Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Codecast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at CodecastZM and subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you never miss a show. Leave us a rating on iTunes and please do tell a friend about the show.